Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air, KLW's weekly radio magazine of the performing arts. I'm your host, David LaTulipe. Well, the play's the thing, for the most part, on this edition of Open Air, as we hear from Jessica Bird Beza about the 43rd annual 2020 Bay Area Playwrights Festival. Jessica is the Executive Artistic Director of the Playwrights Foundation and will be on hand remotely to discuss this year's virtual edition of the festival with playwright Noelle Vinyas about her magical realism contribution, Derejo. Our Corona Radio Theater Initiative continues with artists from The Marsh, San Francisco's breeding ground for new performance. Judith Dambowicz and Jessica Litwack both present excerpts from their respective solo shows. Welcome to the Cancer Cafe and 50,000 Mice. But to start with, familiar voices, both verbal and musical, for regular listeners to this station, and a talk with artistic co-directors of music at Menlo, Wuhan, and David Finkel, both internationally acclaimed performers on piano and cello, respectively. This summer's festival, Haydn Connections, has been postponed to next summer due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Regular listeners will recognize these artists as co-artistic directors of the Chamber Music Society of Lincoln Center, heard here on Monday evenings at 9 on KALW. David, Wuhan, welcome back to Open Air.
Thank you.
Sure. It's a brave new world of Open Air, as well as for you as artistic directors of two incredibly acclaimed ensembles. But I imagine that you as a couple and as a performing arts couple have things a little bit less inconvenienced than most in that you can still make music together.
Well, I wish that I could say that we had actually had time to do more of that over the past 3 months, but the reconstruction of not only Music and Menlo Festival, but the entire coming season of Chamber Society of Lincoln Center has taken more time in programming, accelerated programming mode than I think we've ever been in. So yes, our heads are in a new space right now, trying to replicate as closely as possible the chamber music experience, whether it's at the festival or in the concert hall or in the winter or the summer. And I'm actually quite excited about the coming Music at Menlo Festival because we stuffed it with as many activities and facets and surprises as a regular festival. And I think it's going to feel something like the real thing.
Well, let's drill down on it. It's opening on tomorrow evening, in fact, with an intermezzo opening. First of all, intermezzo, is that an intentional rebranding of the season, given the crisis?
Absolutely. Intermezzo in the Italian musical term means it's a short intermezzo between two long segments. So that's exactly what it is right now. But the intermezzo is supposed to be a sort of a short and burst of energy or mysterious energy. At the moment, it's filled with energy. I will take the mysterious part out. There are segments in there besides the opening night. There are lots of learning experience. There's lectures. There's artist interviews. There are live performances. There are broadcasts of the highly produced the chamber music concerts from Lincoln Center. There are many opportunities for people to gather and learn about chamber music. So it's like David said, it's really jam-packed with activities, and mostly it's aiming at education.
Right. And will there be live elements associated with the festival as well? Is there everything pre-recorded and pre-produced?
Yes, there will be four live sessions starting on Sunday. Actually, there'll be five of them. Four is a live performance and discussion of great music. First one is with Debussy. Second one is outdoor quartet with the Beethoven quartet. Third is the Brahms E minor sonata by Nikon Lakas and Michael Brown. And the fourth one was me and Arnold Sussman with Beethoven sonata. And then there's one very special live event is we're going to do the very first internet CD release party for the Winterizer through music at Menlo and collaborating with the BBC magazine from London.
We'll hear a bit of the Schubert Winterreisen and talk about that in just a moment. But I imagine the whole chamber music reopening for a live performance is going to have a long road ahead. And now, as a flutist, I feel like a droplet spewing hazmat. And whereas probably easier for piano and strings to get back together than it will be for woodwinds. Will we have to excise woodwinds or just isolate them once things get going? David, well, you want to?
This summer's festival is there's plenty of woodwind music in it and singing. But there's nothing to worry about online. We'll deal with that down the road, and it's the subject of endless discussion especially among concert presenters such as ourselves.
So how is that discussion taking place? Are you meeting on a regular basis? Are you just listening and paying attention to forums and things that are happening? It seems like Europe is thinking a lot more ahead than things here are in the States.
We actually have created some of our own forums. Just yesterday, we had a town hall between us and five or six different prominent chamber music presenters around the United States and in Canada as well. And the level of discussion about dealing with this was really at the highest level that I have ever encountered, because these people are all so experienced and wise and thinking deeply about the future. So yes, there needs to be a lot of very intelligent and very careful thinking about how we reopen, because of course we want to reopen successfully.
Safely,
I think,
of course.
The art form is on our side, because our music is not going anywhere. It is totally secure. Our music is not under any threat from the virus. It's immune to the virus. So it's just a question of delivery and when we can do it, but it will return.
And naturally, music at Menlo, as well as Chamber Music Society of Lincoln Center, is very dependent on the loyalty and the sustainability that donors and benefactors are providing during this time, as ticket sales, as we all know, only account for part of the income of these major organizations. Now, is there any way to gauge how many people will be listening, either before or after the fact? Is there a pre-registration for some of these events, or can you tally through some magical electronic means who's been listening?
Absolutely. With the digital season, we actually have the opportunity to reach not only the local audience, usually needs the personal attendance. And this festival, you can now reach everywhere. I'm expecting when we open, we'll know more of the data. But at the Chamber Music Society's case, we have surged for some of them, as high, depends on the age group, as high as 600% of increase.
Wow.
And we also discovered that people are watching from all over the world. So for Music at Menlo's audience, we're actually quite excited. I know we have conversation with special Chinese consultants to reach the Chinese audience. We have a marketing effort to spread the words, and as well as all of the students that can really view all these offerings. Internet is a beautiful place. It's just no boundary. So it's actually, in my opinion, is a great opportunity. You talk about funding earlier, and which is important for, it's in everybody's mind. And I think two things are important to know, that Music at Menlo has committed actually to lead the way, pay the musician 50% of their fee, even they are not performing. We move everything to next season. When they come back, we will pay them 75% of the fee. So in total, they are getting 125%. But the beauty is that we're giving them hope that there will be another festival to attend to, that their work is not going to waste. And second, the little bit we could do and support arts organization, it will not only help the organization to survive and we can be here for our audience, as well as helping the musician to continue to do their work and also survive this terrible pandemic.
That's fantastic. And I know that a lot of airfare is going to be saved. You guys won't be coming to Menlo. As much as we all enjoy the personal encounter of having the artists with us, and of course, the thriving sensation of enjoying an audience's response to your performances, there is some interesting savings to be had here and there.
Correct. I have tell you it's very encouraging because we know we have called all the people who already purchased the ticket, talked to them about the situation, and we have the most astonishing support from all of our audience. At Chamber Music, especially in Chamber Music Festival, is a very, very tight community. It's like a family. And so we are very, very grateful to all of our audience, and we're here for them. Musicians are so excited to play again. I look forward to the day that we can jump on stage and be together again for sure.
Indeed, so do I. And let's talk a little bit. You touched on some of the happenings that are going on during the week, these lunchtime learning events.
Yes.
Well, lunchtime learning corresponds to our weekday sessions, which consist mostly of master classes by our resident artists, but also once in a while with something called a cafe conversation, where an artist will get up and give a lecture of some kind about a subject that they're particularly interested in. There are many silver linings to be found if you look hard enough about the pandemic and the things that it causes artists to do. One of the things about this summer is that because we are accessing our archives for content, that we are able to select from multiple summers and multiple artists. So, for example, the selection of these master classes and cafe conversations is very eclectic in terms of the year from which it came. So in one summer, we're able to revisit six or seven different summers, and we're able to pick and choose and program that way. And there's far many more artists appearing in this festival than we could ever afford to bring in the single festival.
Well,
we could even house
yeah.
them in a single festival. So there are many wonderful things about that. So we wanted it to feel something. We wanted it to feel as much like the real festival as possible. So this noontime learning thing is a time when the public used to come in, and also the students were always there to, you know, partake of the wisdom of our artists and master classes and learn more deeply about a piece of music.
That's fantastic. And one of the hallmarks of Music is Mental has been that thematic approach to the festival. This year's Haydn Connections postponed, but always having different artists collaborating and seeing the interconnections between that theme. And now you have the panoply as an appropriately titled intermezzo theme that you can pick and choose from the incredible archive of Music at Menlo. That's fantastic. Which brings us to the final encounter, I believe, or I might have the wrong date here, for Schubert's Winterreise, a noon encounter on Sunday, July 26th with Michael Parloff, called a re-encounter, Schubert's Winterreise and Classical Twilight. So what will we learn then?
The Winterreise is one of the most important sound cycle in Schubert's life. It's the last huge sound cycle before this great composer, his death. So, this is one of the most inspiring and the most heart-wrenching sound cycle, with a young man trudging through the snow and seeing the future and knowing he's going to die. And there's 24 segments of it. The cycle itself lasts about an hour. So on the 26th that morning at 10 o'clock, we're going to have a release party. And BBC Magazine from London will join us to do the formal release, both in the United States and in London as well. And then this is 10 o'clock. I will be interviewed with Nikolai Borchov, the incredible baritone. So we thought this is really appropriate for this time, pandemic, but hope and beauty all in this one sound cycle. At 12 o'clock, Michael Parloff, one of our favorite lecturers, will actually take the Winterreise apart, explain to you the composition technique, what the words means, where the background is. So if you have a CD, if you hear the artist talk at 10 o'clock and noon, you can learn about the sound cycle. And I hope by 2 o'clock, you will buy a CD and enjoy that Winterreise.
Very nice. Well, we're lucky that we can give people a little tease, perhaps a prelude for this. Again, an amazing work, Winterreise, a setting of 24 poems by Wilhelm Müller, working on this as he was already at the age of 25, dying of syphilis, ultimately succumbing to the disease just 6 years later. It reminds me of the anecdote of, like, if Schubert was my age, he would have been dead already 26 years. What have I accomplished? Have I done 9 symphonies and 600 songs at the age of ripe old age of 57? No, but I'm trying to be humble and enjoy Schubert at least. David, perhaps you could enlighten us a little bit on the opening movement, Gute Nacht, and especially that beautiful transition in the last verse in which the whole character of the poem changes.
You know, it's a beautiful, it's a very, this song cycle and this following this wandering soul through it, as it goes on, he becomes more and more sort of hallucinatory. By the end, you have him seeing 3 suns in the sky and imagining where he wanders into a graveyard, and he imagines it's a hotel, and he talks to the gravekeeper and asks him if he has a room, and there's no room. And so by the end, you know, that it's hallucinatory. But this is already even starting in the beginning, where he, I mean, the very first line of the entire cycle is basically, I arrived a stranger and I leave as a stranger. And it's about him coming into a place where he does not feel at home. He falls in love straight off the bat with some girl, and the girl is talking about love, and the mother is talking about getting married, but it comes to nothing. And at the same time, he looks around and he says, so ist die Welt so trübe, so gloomy is the world. And at the end, he kind of sneaks away at night, and he carves something on the door, the gate to her house, just so that she knows that he was there. But then he takes off and he's gone. So that's the way the whole thing starts. And it kind of all goes downhill from there.
Well, we're fortunate to have a little preview here of the great baritone Nikolai Borchev and the beautiful, subtle and virtuosic piano accompaniment by Wuhan for Winterreise. David Finkel, Wuhan, thanks for taking some time today for talking about the festival. I wish you a successful intermezzo. More information at music@menlo.org. Thanks again for being with us.
Thank you.
Here is an excerpt from Schubert's Winterreise. Gute Nacht. Such wildest From Franz Schubert's incredible song cycle, Winterreise, to be heard as part of Music at Menlo's new reconfigured season intermezzo. On Sunday, July 26th, there's a release event online at 10 a.m., a re-encounter with Michael Parloff, a discussion at noon of Winterreise and all of its implications. musicatmenlo.org for more information. By the way, you just heard the beautiful Nikolai Borchev baritone and Wuhan piano for that work. Now it's time for our Corona Radio Theater segment, an opportunity for actors here in the Bay Area to perform live on the radio rather than just endure probing questions from me about upcoming performances. I'm pleased to welcome back artists from The Marsh this week for excerpts from their solo shows. Jessica Litwak and Judith Damboek. Damboek. Let's start with Jessica. She's a playwright, actor, educator, puppet builder, and recognized leader in the field of socially engaged theater. Her plays have been produced off-Broadway and on stages across the U.S., Europe, and the U.K., including at the Edinburgh Festival. Written for the 2020 centennial celebration of the 19th Amendment, Jessica Litwak's 50,000 Mice is a fast-moving, funny, educational, and moving work about an overlooked corner of the suffrage movement. 50,000 Mice examines the many factions of suffrage from the perspective of a Jewish suffragette trying to reach working-class women who have been mostly ignored by the U.S. movement. Through its many characters, the play offers views from diverse women across the movement. Here now is Jessica Litwak and an excerpt from 50,000 Mice.
Everyone have soup. It's so wondrous to see you all. Can you believe election day is finally here? October 10th, 1911, the moment we've been working for.
Miss Selina, we need two more bowls of soup back here.
Coming right up, Tuli. Quick instructions, everyone, before we move out to the polls. We have to be on our toes today. No stone unturned, no precinct unattended, no man in the city of San Francisco left behind. We have to get to every single mail by the times the polls close today and make sure they are voting with us. 15 years ago, the women of California fought and lost. In 1896, we made mistakes. We are not going to make those same mistakes today. Last time we tried to win suffrage for California, it was just the blue blood upper class controlling the game. The Votes for Women Club has galvanized the working women of San Francisco, and you are powerful. I will thank you from the bottom of my heart, but not until we win this. You each have your district assignments. Eat your soup and head out. Hey, Selena, slow down, baby. Oh, this is Bess Fisk. She's from New York. She calls everyone baby. No, I don't. Just you. Anyway, Selena, some folks don't know their district assignments because they ain't never been here before. You got, by my count, plenty of newcomers. And there's some folks over there from Marin County who don't know what's going on. Oh, goodness. Right. For those of you who are new to us, I am Selena Solomons, and this is my lunchroom. I hope no one is here for the Human Flower Show. They are marvelous, as are our suffrage bazaars, our comedy skits, our dramatic plays, our fancy musical numbers. But today is St. Crispian's Day, and you ladies are my band of brothers. That's bloody Shakespeare, isn't it? Henry number 5, the king. We few, we happy few, we band of sisters. For she today that sheds her blood with me shall be my sister. And California women now abed shall think themselves accursed. They were not here and hold their girlhoods cheap. Whiles any speaks that fought with us upon St. Crispian's Day. Hey, Selena, there's some gentlemen among us today. You ought to welcome them too. Oh, you men among us, yes. You advocates of suffrage, you wouldn't be here if you weren't. We need you marching to the polls today to do the right thing. So eat up. You know, folks, other days, Selena offers French artichokes with freshly made mayonnaise and her Abba's spiced meat on flat bread. 5-cent nutritious lunches are the draw. But as we say in the club, Thule, oh, a girl who comes to eat will stay to lead. But today we are in the battlefield, and today we have leaflets and soup. Yeah, we got your bisque, your borscht, your broth, your bouillon. Praise, win, and feast, nickel a bowl. So you may rest a few moments here in sisterhood, but then we must go out and take election day. So eat your soup. Eat your soup! Quiz the people, Selena. There's no time for quizzes today, Bess. Quiz the people, Thule. Oh, quiz. When male voters go to the polls today, the only important question on the ballot is, should women be allowed to vote? Well, you give the guests a chance to answer, Thule. Okay, here's another one. What 5 states have already approved the radical and controversial idea that women are intelligent and sensible enough to share the burden of democracy? Wyoming, 1869. Utah, 1870. Idaho and Colorado, 1896. And Washington State, last year, 1910. Oh. Sorry, I did it again, didn't I? And today, with your help, folks, our state of California will become the 6th state in the union to win a vote for women. We'll sew the 6th star on the flag of suffrage. That's right, Thule. Out there today, as we approach the men at the polls, we must remember our points: safe working conditions, equal pay, equal rights of property, rights to our children, rights to our bodies. Tell the people all you've done this year for suffrage, Selena. It's late, Bess. We need to get out there. Tully? Oh, yeah, we gone knocking door to talk with urban voters and immigrant populations. Yeah, about the city's problems with leaflets in French, German, Italian, and Spanish. We talked to them about patriotism and chauvinism. Yeah. And we had a big rally in both the Mission and the Sunset districts at the Dreamland Rink. And today will be the day we celebrate the spectacular vote. So make sure you have sweaters and scarves. It will be windy out there. Did you bring umbrellas? It isn't meant to rain, but they can be useful for protection. We have extras. Tell them about the paper bags. Bess, why do you keep stalling our progress? We need to get out there. We printed 10,000 paper bags, which were passed out at dairies and grocery stores saying votes for women and the billboards. Tuli. Oh, yeah. I hope y'all have seen the billboards posted all over the city on routes of streetcars. Billboards 10 feet tall, Oakland Wharf, duck blinds, commuters taking the Southern Pacific won't miss the huge lettering. Justice to California women. Vote yes to Amendment 4. Give your girl the same chance as your boy. Right. Now, Tuli, I need you out in the field. Now. You take District 5. If you are with District 5, please stand up and follow Tuli. Tuli, check in with the Corps of Ballot Watchers. This morning, they've already reported 3,000 fraudulent ballots. I can spot cheaters from a block away. Slow down, kid. You'll trip over your enthusiasm and land on your ass. Talk to the fellas one by one. She knows what to do out there, Bess. We've been preparing for weeks now. I worry she'll hurt herself or someone else. She's smart, Artuli. She'll be calm and collected out there, right?
Calm and collected, so our dreams come true.
Selena's promise you this American dream, Tuli. But you gotta understand, getting the vote ain't gonna make you rich.
I don't want to be rich, Miss Bess. I come to San Francisco streets from Galway gutters. Hunger living inside me like a drunk uncle. Hungry till I got right here to Miss Selena's lunchroom, where soup is a nickel and comrades are free. Poverty? Oh, that's something I expect. It's shite. But believe me, it's a devil with whom I am intimate. I didn't come all this way for the American dream. Streets laid with diamonds, coins falling from the sky. I didn't come for fame, starlight over the water, rags to riches, all that. I didn't come for any of that. And be sure, Miss Bess, I didn't come for gold. I came for power. I'm going to get the vote for women today, not so we can be rich, but so we can be strong. Bless your heart, Tuli. Go out and do well. And like Bess says, speak clearly and slowly and make your points. I will make my points. Keep your elbows out and your voice loud. I'll be a bony shrieker to defeat the patriarchy. You will bring about a new age, an age of women. I'm for women. Hooray. Off you go. I'm right behind you, and you know where to meet me at 5 o'clock.
Yeah. I meet you on Market Street at the secret place.
Selena will be holding the fort here at the lunchroom. What are you talking about, Bess? I'll be leading the groups into districts 3 and 4. The lunchroom will be closed. People need a place to get nourished and revived. It's going to be a long day. I gave them soup. We need every set of hands on deck. Look, I don't want you out there, Selena. Hear me. The streets are dangerous today for all women, but you are a known commodity. You're the face of San Francisco suffrage. You're a Jew. And I am fine in the streets, Bess. I have practically lived out there campaigning this last year. I can handle myself. Listen to me, baby. I will not let you risk it, not even for the cause. Well, it's none of your business. Of course it is. It's not. So Miss Selena, are you coming? Yes. No. Then who do I report to at the secret place? To me. Don't you understand, Tuli? It's dangerous for Selena out there. You don't want to get her to get hurt, do you? Of course not. Will I meet you then on the secret corner, Miss Bess? No, you'll meet me. Bess is being silly. Now go, Tuli. All assigned to District 5, go with Tuli. Good luck out there, Tuli. See you soon. And off she goes into the bright day. We'll all be following her soon. She would move heavens for you. Babe, your faithful foot soldier of suffrage, that Tuli. Not sure you should promise everybody the magical power of the vote. You're the one who promises things to girls. Bess is running her own shop, ladies and gents. After the earthquake crushed the department store she managed, Bess opened a woman-run shop in a basement and is giving working ladies all over the city a leg up, including Tuli. Bess brings East Coast bravado to the Golden West. Yeah, I rode out here with my brothers, was planning on staying just 3 months and then making my way home, but I fell in love with San Francisco. Okay.
From her solo work, we heard Jessica Litwak perform an excerpt from 50,000 Mice, a work presented under the auspices of The Marsh and presented here on Open Air as part of our Corona Radio Theater. We continue with Corona Radio Theater and our friends at The Marsh with an excerpt from Welcome to the Cancer Cafe by Judith C. Dambowick. Judith is a PT clinical specialist in chronic pain and Feldenkrais practitioner with decades of clinical and teaching experience. At age 58, she was diagnosed with multiple myeloma, an incurable blood cancer with no clear accepted treatment path. Following her diagnosis, Judith began writing and performing about her experience as a way to cope with her life as a myeloma patient being the new normal, eventually leading to the birth of her first solo work, Welcome to the Cancer Cafe. Her performance brings audiences on her unexpected journey from provider to patient, sharing the profound lessons this role reversal offers. Using actual conversations with providers, Judith portrays her interactions with the medical establishment, bringing keen insight and offering a better understanding of the journey and choices faced by people with similar circumstances. And so, on Open Air's Corona Radio Theater, here is Judith C. Dambowick's Welcome to the Cancer Cafe.
Another friend just called to say he was diagnosed with cancer. I can't imagine that happening to me. Most of my adult life, I worked as a physical therapist in a multidisciplinary pain management clinic. With the addition of the Feldenkrais method, I was able to make a real difference in people's lives. My daughter, Yeshi, she used to say I was one of the few adults she knew who loved to go to their job every day. My religion, the ocean. Each summer, my friends and I would hire Deb, our kayak mentor and friend, to take us on a week-long kayak camping adventure off the west coast of Canada. Just enough excitement to keep us on the edge of our safety zone. I'd be so happy to get back into a warm and dry sleeping bag each night, knowing I had survived the challenge of the day. Once, Deb yelled, "Turn to the left, now!" 2 foot standing waves. No way was I turning sideways to that. "Turn to the left, or get crushed by the rocks and die!" I remember it was the fall of 2014, and I was working with a colleague, a neurologist. I asked him, had he ever seen eye swelling with trigeminal neuralgia? That's a diagnosis I had given myself after months of increasing facial pain. It fit all the criteria. Now, usually this gentleman is very slow and methodic, but he stood up, turned around quickly, looked directly into the asymmetry in my face, and ordered a CAT scan for that very same afternoon. They found a tumor. It had eaten away quite a bit of the lower portion of my right eye socket. Luckily, my right eye was still intact. But we didn't know what type of tumor it was yet. Chaya, my partner of 26 years and I, we're entering the office of our very first oncologist we're going to meet. Hello, Judith. Oh, you're Chaya. Okay, you must be Judith. Enough tests are back to indeed confirm you do have multiple myeloma. Mm-hmm. It's an incurable blood cancer of the bone marrow cells. Yes, those are the ones that fight off infection. Now, it'll be another 2 weeks until we get the genetics test back, and that's when we'll know whether she has the standard or the aggressive mode. No, people do not usually die in their first year. What do they die of? Organ failure, infections, pneumonia. Next steps, yes, of course. We'll start you with radiation to the tumor in your right sinus cavity, a 3 chemotherapy cocktail with dexamethasone. Yes, that is a very strong steroid that helps the chemo to work better. And of course, a stem cell transplant to follow. So you see, with this type of cancer, there are many treatments which I personally feel have what I consider to be very manageable side effects. Oh, wow. How am I going to look like I can handle this? And I say look because growing up, people always wondering if I was a boy or a girl. And to get ahead of feeling unsafe, I learned to look confident and powerful, strong. But it was long before I had time to really develop these qualities. In fact, I often feel like I'm an imposter, and trusting my own decision-making is challenging. I know. I look tough. But I'm not. Chaya, let's go home. It's just been a really, really long and hard day. And as we're leaving the office, I noticed that the light coming through the window, it looks so different. It's like everything has changed. Do you know I worked in the same building, 2 floors down for 15 years, and the light, it's never looked like that. It looks surreal. It looks like I'm on some kind of a TV show or something. Oh, what a great audience we have today. The show we have for you is about cancer warriors, those people with multiple myeloma, an incurable blood cancer with an unclear treatment protocol and a shortened lifespan. But before we meet our first guests, let's hear from our favorite sponsor. Hello, hello, my name is Lady Death. You heard me, Death that is. And for a mere $3.99 a month, until you go toodly, doodly do, I can help you with the inevitable. Remember, no one at all gets out of here alive. And I take Venmo. For your old effects, I take PayPal too. Oh, I can't believe Ellen has invited me to her show. Hi, Ellen. Yeah, I'm so excited to be here. I know that the guests that you have with cancer, they're really powerful, strong. They, you know, the type that fight all the way. And some of them, they have miraculous cures. Yeah, that's something I haven't even let myself to consider yet. But if some of that energy could rub off on me and it helps sustain me, that would be great, because I'm having a lot of feelings. I mean, sadness and grief, anger, confusion, gratitude for my family and community, and already the appreciation of small, small things. You know, Ellen, when I first got diagnosed, I cried a lot. Now, I agree with you. I watch your show. Attitude is everything. The doctors were worried about me. One oncologist wrote in his notes that I had a history of severe depression. simply because I allowed myself to have feelings in his office. I thought that would be a safe place to have these new feelings. So, Ellen, in addition to the shock of getting my very first cancer diagnosis, I was also feeling shame about not responding appropriately. Ellen, is fighting really my only choice? You know, when people find out that you have cancer, they can say the strangest things. Do you believe in miracles? You've got to. Stick with me. You're going to be okay. My acupuncturist, he cured my allergies. I'm sure he can help you with this. So, new Judith, good to see you at Shabbat services this Saturday. We haven't seen you in a while, but that's okay. I want to remind you that the congregation prays for you every week, but I pray for you every night. Every night I pray for you. I don't even brush my teeth every night. And what are they praying for? A cure? A long life on chemo with minimal side effects? Or a quick and painless death? What would you be praying for?
An excerpt from Welcome to the Cancer Cafe by Judith C. Damboek. Cultivated by The Marsh and performed live today as part of our Corona Radio Theater initiative. And back with us to talk about happenings at The Marsh is founder and artistic director of The Marsh, Stephanie Weissman, something she launched back in 1989. Stephanie, welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you for having us. What a wonderful opportunity for Marsh Stream.
Well, usually I have to make sure I specify which Marsh these performers will be appearing at, in Berkeley or San Francisco, but not so much right now.
No, we have a new Marsh. It's called Marsh Stream, and we're broadcasting. It's our broadcast platform. Watch out, KLLW, our performer platform. You never know. It's going to take off.
Well, we're happy to assist in that launch. We're putting the runway lights on for you. And it's been tremendously successful. You're doing something virtually every day.
Yeah, we're doing shows about 7 nights a week, and we're doing about 18 youth programs during the summer. And we have fitness and other shows at noon. So it's been amazing. And what you saw tonight were 2 shows that are going to be on our Performer Spotlight program this weekend. Jessica Lit Walks is this weekend, 50,000 Mice. And then next weekends, we have Judith C's Welcome to the Cancer Cafe. And also tonight, I know we just got to hear a little of Jessica's play, but she's going to be on my interview show that I do every Thursday night.
Fantastic. And that's streaming live at themarsh.org.
Exactly. At 7:30.
We'll have links at KALW.org as well for that. And don't forget that we still have bingo hosted by Josh Kornbluth as well as part of the Marsh Mix. So
That bingo night is amazingly funny. If you haven't tried it, you do not know how to play bingo. Most people don't at the Marsh Bingo. It's amazing.
TheMarsh.org. Thanks so much for taking just a moment of your time, Stephanie.
Thank you so much for having us.
Of course. Well, as I mentioned at the top of the hour, the play's the thing on this edition of Open Air. Good afternoon to you once again. I'm David LaTulipe. The West Coast's premier launch pad for exceptional plays and playwrights, Playwrights Foundation, has announced the artistic teams for the 2020 Bay Area Playwrights Festival, featuring playwrights Tyler English Beckwith, Stephanie Kuo, Jordan Ramirez Puckett, Deneen Reynolds Knott, and Noel Vinyas. The 2020 Bay Area Playwrights Festival runs virtually this year online, available worldwide. Today, I'm happy to be talking briefly with 2 artists from the festival, the new artistic director, Jessica Bird Beza, and festival participant, playwright Noel Vinyas, whose play, De Orejo, has its first reading online this Saturday. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Of course. Well, Jessica, you became executive artistic director of the foundation and organization some 7 months later. Boom, a whole new world. How has the festival transition been going?
I am still in my first year as executive artistic director, and I think all of us have kind of been thrown challenges this year and thinking about how do we innovate in this new world. And I'll say, you know, there's challenges that come with that and there's opportunities that come with that. You know, I think as a new leader, when you come into an organization, often you're battling history and the past and the way things are done. And this year, we're all doing things for the first time and innovating together. And so, you know, to me, I think there has been kind of excitement in that and thinking about what are the values that are intrinsic in theater and in our festival and in serving our playwrights and creating community and continuing to develop these new works and seeing how we can continue to do that. And so we have been having a great time together, honestly, not to say it's easy, but one of the things that is very integral to the Bay Area Playwrights Festival is all of the artistic teams go on a retreat. And usually we go to like a remote location out in the woods for 3 days and are together. The playwrights read their plays out loud. We learn about the plays. We develop deep relationships. And so we put that online last week and we had community times together where we were in conversation about the plays. We heard the playwrights read their plays and we had experiences together. And those that I think we thought weren't possible in this online world and to where the work was deeply impacting all of us that were in the virtual room. And so this week we are now in tech putting these plays online with the actors. And innovating what that looks like. A lot of people have been experiencing with the Zoom webinar world, and we have been looking at a new streaming program called VMix that will be streaming out to Vimeo and allows us to kind of have a little bit more control over when we send the actors, when we don't, being able to play some videos and to kind of have some backgrounds and have a little more theatricality to the readings. And these works and development, and also thinking about how do we still have community? Like the audience is the last character to a play that a playwright gets to learn from and gets to add. And so we've also been talking a lot about how do we still interact with the audience in this world and have guidelines for how to respond or to have questions for the audience afterwards.
Sure.
And to have them still participating and a part of the whole process. Well, so
it's a fantastic approach where once again, it's not better or worse, it's different. And it's once again, as I've mentioned almost every week, it's the artistic community that is innovating and coming up with solutions rather than just dwelling on the problem. So good for you for that. Now, I imagine that part of the festival excitement, though, from the playwright's perspective, is the opportunity to perhaps for the first time travel to San Francisco, see their work performed, enjoy the audience reactions, as well as interactions with other playwrights in the community. You mentioned how you're doing that virtually and how it's really a different but also nonetheless, uplifting experience. That's great. Is there a way for you to gauge what your virtual audience numbers will be after the fact?
Yeah, we are able to tell who is buying tickets. And I'll also say, you know, buying tickets online, it's a last minute world. So right now we're kind of like, what's going to happen for this weekend? You know, we have some similar numbers to if we were in person, a little better than if we were in person. But I've talked to many people that are like, oh, yeah, I'm coming. And I'm like, have you bought your ticket? And it's like, no, I'll do it.
That's the thing. I mean, you know? people have those intentions. I'm one of them, too. It's like, oh, I forgot about that.
Right. But you can purchase it 5 minutes before it starts and log in on your computer. So we're expecting that is going to happen this weekend.
Let's encourage them to do that for Darejo. And let's get Noelle into the conversation before we have to leave all too quickly. Noelle, you're resident playwright at Playwrights Foundation. We're a 2019 yes. Gerasi resident artist. Congrats on Darejo already winning a number of awards. Magical realism. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah. I mean, magical realism is an interesting term because, of course, it's something that often comes up when discussing Latin American literature. And I think that the same is true for my play, but also because magical realism is a way that Latin Americans tend to experience life. There is kind of this sense of like a history of things happening without explanation. And that can be because of a corrupt government, or that can be because you live in multiple realities as an immigrant or as a bicultural person. And so that is part of one of the elements of the play, is that we do have this like experience of multiple realities, and one you could possibly call like a magical realism reality. We call them barrio moments in the play. So yeah, that's definitely a big part of it. And but the play itself also has a very, you know, Aristotelian arc that follows this woman who is running for local office for the first time in Virginia for the General Assembly. And she's hoping to bring on an old friend to be on her campaign. And so she's having this evening where she's having everyone over. She's having fights with her sister. And in the meantime, there's a whole storm happening and all this these barrio moments around it. So really, the play itself does swirl in a way kind of similar to a storm.
How many actors involved?
Six.
Wow, fantastic. Now, some playwrights might be more or less inclined to get input from the actors involved. This is not the first go-around for Derejo. Where are you on that spectrum?
Oh, I'm big on actor input. I mean, especially for a play like this, which is an ensemble play, and it is literally hard as the writer to hold all six characters and their, you know, political beliefs and their histories in my brain. Actors are first and foremost in like helping me track. So every time an actor says, "Oh, what's happening here?" and I think a lot of what Playwrights Foundation does really well is they kind of move the conversation towards questions instead of necessarily being telling the writer what to do. But the actors that I have it's a really incredible cast, and to be honest, a cast that we probably would have fought harder to get if it weren't for COVID. So COVID also brings another opportunity because other actors don't have the ability to be in shows they would normally be in at very high levels, are able to work on our shows too. So the caliber of the actors in the room is so high that I welcome all feedback. And I'm really excited to hear anything that they bring to the table.
Once again, making lemonade from lemons.
Yeah, and we're really excited to have Noelle and her play Derecho in the festival because we, Playwrights Foundation, has supported multiple readings along the process. And so it's exciting. Our festival is actually an open selection process, and we have literary committees, and it's a very democratic process that brings the top plays. And so we're just very excited to be continuing to support Noelle and her career and having to be with us as a resident playwright for these past 4 years.
Derejo can be seen and heard on Saturday, July 18th at 5 p.m., as well as on Saturday, the 25th at noon. One of some 700 different submissions that were submitted for the 2020 Bay Area Playwrights Festival. More information about the full two-week celebration of great new works, a link at our website, klw.org. Jessica, Noelle, thanks so much for taking just a little bit of your time, and we'll get some people to actually purchase some tickets for these upcoming events.
Thank you very much.
That's Open Air for this week. I'm David LaTulipe. My thanks to Neil Swinkles for producing the show. It's archived at KALW.org. Spread the word. And if you've got a show suggestion, send me an email, david@KALW.org. Thanks so much for listening.